I'd like to call to order the Committee on Higher Education. And we're just one short of quorum, so we'll wait for one other member to come on in, and then we'll do the minutes. But in lieu of that, we're going to go right into testimony today. And we've got the Minnesota Private Colleges here today. Thank you for coming. You could state your name for the record and then continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Paul Cirkvenik. I'm the president of the Minnesota Private College Council. I want to thank you at the outset for the opportunity to testify today about Minnesota's private nonprofit colleges and universities. Today I'm joined by three of our member institutions' presidents: Sister Andrea Lee, the president of St. Catherine's University; David Anderson, the president of St. Olaf College; and Larry Goodwin, the president of the College of St. Scholastica. What we'd like to do is start by giving you an overview of the private colleges in Minnesota, and then having each of the three presidents talk individually about the work their colleges are doing.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Cirkvenik. We're actually at quorum now, so we're just going to take a moment just to approve the minutes. I have a motion to approve the minutes. Okay, we have Representative Barrett has moved the minutes for February 4th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay, can I have a motion to approve the minutes from February 10th?
So moved.
Okay, Representative Barrett moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in those favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Okay, thank you, and continue with your testimony.
Madam Chair, let me start by telling you a little bit about the Private College Council as an association. We're made up of 17 four-year liberal arts institutions who all share three essential qualities. They're all private, nonprofit, charitable institutions. They're all committed to providing a four-year liberal arts education to their students. And they all have missions that are fundamentally public purpose in nature. And I would try to summarize their missions like this. I would say they provide high-quality educational opportunities that prepare students for success in a career and in life, and for service and leadership in their communities. The colleges like to remind me that they're independent institutions. Each one functions under its own governance by their own board of trustees, and not as a part of or under the control of a larger system or institution. I think you all know that our schools receive no state higher education appropriations for operating support or capital funding. Only a small share of the total state higher education budget, about 3%, benefits our students who are eligible to receive need-based financial aid through the Minnesota State Grant Program. Our schools, however, play a significant role in providing higher education opportunities to Minnesota students and in contributing to the human capital and workforce development in our state. In fact, one important theme I'd like to give you to consider is that although each of our colleges are relatively small in size, taken together, they have a large-scale impact in our state. Our colleges range in size from an enrollment of 600 to an enrollment of 10,000, with most colleges enrolling between 2,000 and 5,000 students. In total, in the fall of 2013, our schools enrolled just under 60,000 students, making our collective enrollment close to the same as the University of Minnesota and the four-year schools in the Minsky system. About 42,000 of our students are undergrads, and about 70% of our undergrad students are Minnesotans. The remainder are national and international students who are attracted to the opportunities our colleges offer. We attract about 12,800 undergrads from other states, which is actually either more than either the Minsky four-year schools or the U of M system. And especially considering that Minnesota is a net exporter of high school graduates to colleges outside of Minnesota, drawing non-Minnesotans here is a good thing for Minnesota. In the last academic year, our colleges produced about 29% of the four-year degrees granted in the state. And we produced a larger share of degrees in some critical fields of study, including physics and chemistry, foreign languages, math, health professions, biology, and business fields. About 20% of our alums enroll in graduate or professional education within a year of completing their undergraduate degree. You might be interested to know that our undergraduates are an important source of students for the U of M's graduate programs. For example, in 2013, about 1 in 4 U of M medical school students were graduates of our colleges. Our colleges are also leaders in providing graduate education in Minnesota. 11 of our member institutions have graduate programs, which combined produce 42% of the master's level degrees granted in Minnesota last year, including about half of all master's degrees in the fields of education, computer science, public administration, and business. The model of undergraduate education at our colleges is student-focused. Our schools have great faculty-to-student ratios and small class sizes, which foster a high degree of interaction and engagement between students and professors. When students are more engaged in the classroom experience and campus life of a college community, they have improved learning outcomes and higher on-time graduation rates. And we deeply value experiential learning and a global perspective. 90% of our alumni state that they have participated in internships, faculty-supervised research projects, or study abroad opportunities while they were in college. In fact, 6 of our colleges are nationally ranked for the level of their student participation in study abroad programs. The students we serve reflect Minnesota. Of our 42,000 undergraduates, 27%, more than 12,000, receive a Pell Grant, meaning that they come from families with incomes generally below $50,000 in household income. 19% are students of color. 29% are transfer students. 14% are non-traditional students, meaning that they are age 25 or older. 13% are enrolled part-time. And 6 of our colleges offer evening, weekend, and online degree completion programs for working adults. Those enrollments account for 7% of our total enrollment and 19% of the enrollment at those 6 colleges. Our collective 4-year graduation rate of 65% is not only the highest in Minnesota and the Midwest, but among the highest in the nation. If you look only at private nonprofit colleges on a state-by-state basis, the average 4-year graduation rate of Minnesota's private colleges ranks 3rd nationally. Our graduation rate for students of color is also high. 55% of students of color graduate in 4 years, which is higher than the overall 4-year graduation rate of private nonprofit colleges nationally. I might just say one thing about on-time graduation rates. They matter because graduating on time is one of the most effective ways to hold down the cost of tuition and the borrowing that students have to undertake. As you can see in this chart, our average student debt levels are not significantly different than our public institution counterparts, even though our students do not benefit from state appropriations that subsidize tuition costs at public institutions. In fact, according to a student debt report from the Office of Higher Education, our student borrowing at our colleges actually declined slightly in the last year. At our colleges, about 90% of students receive financial aid that does not have to be paid back. This is possible in part because our colleges annually award more than $500 million in scholarships, grants, and tuition discounts. This compares to $42 million in state grants and $58 million in Pell and other federal grant aid received by students at our colleges. In other words, our colleges provide $5 of financial aid from their own resources for every dollar of combined federal and state financial aid received by students at private colleges. The financial aid that's provided by our institutions combined with state and federal Pell Grants means that the average net tuition, the price students actually pay at our colleges, is less than half of the published price. In the most recent 2 years, published tuitions have increased 2.2% and 3.6% respectively at our colleges. The graph I'm showing you now takes a five-year look at published tuition prices and institutionally funded financial aid between the years 2008 and 2012, which are the most recent years for which we have comprehensive financial aid data. But published tuition prices during that time rose on average of about 5% per year. At the same time, our colleges increased institutionally funded financial aid by 10% per year. To help keep college affordable, our colleges have been increasing their own financial aid funding at a rate that is greater than the increases in tuition. In order to sustain increasing college-based financial aid spending, our colleges have had to restrain spending in other areas of their budget. And the result of this, the combination of increased institutional aid and spending restraint in other budget areas, is that average net tuition, the price again that students actually pay, has not increased in the way that published tuition has increased. In fact, average net tuition in our schools has been essentially flat since the 2008-2009 school year at about $14,500. And when average net tuition is adjusted for inflation, it's about the same today as it was in the 2003-2004 school year. I want to finish by saying just a little bit about the state grant program. Just as our institutional aid helps keep college affordable, so does the Minnesota State Grant Program. Let me say that we deeply appreciate the financial aid that our students receive from the state grant program. Minnesota State Grants make a huge difference to students at public and private colleges. There are, as you all know, increasing income and educational disparities in our society. For example, a national study found that 50% of students from upper income families obtain a four-year degree by age 25, but only 10% of students from low income families do so. The grant program is an effective way to address educational disparities and other challenges we face in higher education today. The grant program allows the state's limited resources to be targeted to the students who most need help with tuition costs and student debt. Targeting resources to lower income students will focus resources on the educational disparities we see in higher education. And need-based financial aid allows individual students to enroll in the college that is the best fit for them. It makes it more possible for students to attend full-time and more possible to study more and work just a little less. When all those things happen, students are likely to get more out of their college education, more likely to graduate on time, and to borrow less. Our colleges want to serve more students. They want to do more to help with Minnesota's educational challenges, and they want to help build a well-educated workforce for our state. Additional investments in the state grant program will help lower-income and middle-income students to enroll in college, to graduate in a timely way, and to gain a truly transformational educational experience that will pay dividends to them and to the state for a lifetime. So we thank you for your state grant support in the past, and I really want you to hear now from presidents about the work they're doing at their campuses. And I'm happy to answer questions, but I'm sure you want to hear from them more than from me.
Well, good afternoon. As Paul said,
One second, please. Thank you, Mr. Sirkvenek. Do we have any questions first for the first testifier? I think we had Representative Barrett first, and then we'll have Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. Thanks for coming in. I just have a quick question that's been on my mind here since we reviewed slide 9, which talks about the mean debt and the median debt, comparing nonprofit to the U of M to Minnesota universities. You know, that's a really important slide, in my opinion. I think you highlighted the fact that there isn't a lot of difference between the nonprofits and University of Minnesota and Minsku. So I'm wondering why that is. I mean, obviously, it relates to scholarship money that I think the nonprofits have available and provide to their students. So my question is kind of a general one. Scholarship money, do they come from sources that other, like U of M or Minsky, wouldn't have access to it? For example, large, wealthy donors? Or do they come from graduates of your private universities that University of Minnesota might have as well that would give back to the university? Where do you get, if you can share, what's the typical donor that would contribute to a scholarship that would help a student reduce his or her debt?
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm David Anderson, president at St. Olaf College, my alma mater. Our institutional aid comes from two sources. One is gifts that have been made to the college in the form of endowments, which we invest and which we then allocate as aid. Those come from wealthy and middle-income people who have a passion for making scholarship funds available to students. The other source, and the larger source at most of our institutions, is simply price discounting. And so, effectively, the aid that's being granted is tuition and fees that are not being collected as the form of aid.
The other piece that I'm Andrea Lee from St. Catherine, and the other piece that I would add is at our place, at least, we have a very well-developed financial, we call it the Financial Literacy Center, where students are personally coached about financial management, about what to borrow and why, and so they don't end up, you know, using borrowed money to buy a sweatshirt in the bookstore. I always call it the $1,000 sweatshirt problem, you know. But that has helped the students at St. Catherine, at least, be much more aware as students about the need to control the amount of borrowing that they do.
Thank you. I'd probably jump ahead because the presidents haven't talked, so I'll save, if I have anything else, I'll save it for later. But that's a great discussion. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Serpik.
If I might just add one more thing to the original question. An important part about controlling debt is graduating on time. And if you look at debt data, it skyrockets when a student attends a fifth or a sixth year. So you can really control the excessive borrowing by helping a student get through on time.
Okay, Representative Lean, do you want to ask questions now or at the end?
No, actually, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Cerkvenik, going on page 10, I see the affordability. 9 in 10 students receive grants. They don't have to pay back. Is that federal and state grants and institution grants, or?
Yes, that's all three sources.
Okay. And Madam Chair, thank you.
I'm Lane.
One other question, going on to slide 11, change in tuition and fees, a 5% increase from 08 to 12. I believe it was yesterday one of the region candidates had presented information that had said, I can't remember the exact time frame, but it was an annual increase of about 5% tuition. So I guess just taking a look at this, it appears the tuition increase on an annual basis has been lower at the privates than at least the University of Minnesota. Can you comment on how the privates have been able to control those costs a little more than the university?
Mr. Cerkvenik?
Madam Chair, Representative Lean, let me say a couple things, and I'm going to see if the presidents want to step in on that. They might actually have more to say on that than me. In terms of the 90% who receive aid that do not have to be paid back, about 1 in 4 of our students receive a Pell Grant. And I think the number is quite similar for the state grant. So not 90% of our students aren't receiving state aid. Maybe about 1 in 4, 1 in 3 are receiving state aid. 90% are receiving some combination of state and federal and institutional aid. Do you want to talk about your efforts to control tuition now, or? You should introduce yourself, Larry.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
Larry Goodwin, president of the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, Madam Chair, Representative. Well, like any organization, one of the ways we try to contain cost is by cutting out things that we decide are not absolutely mission critical. And in a period of declining demographics for 18-year-olds, we're having to, well, we've made a commitment to reduce our operating budget by 7% over a four-year period. So that's one of the standard ways that we try to keep our costs under control.
I would simply add, when the financial crisis occurred, we decided to benchmark future price increases against what was happening to the CPI, plus 1%. The thinking there was, if costs of living for our families haven't gone up, and if our costs haven't gone up, then our price wouldn't need to go up. So that's been another form of the kind of price discipline that Larry was describing. Collaboration with other colleges to reduce fixed costs by sharing services is another way that's been helpful for us recently.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have another question from Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for Mr. Savanek, is it? I'm on slide, or page 7, I believe it's slide 7, the Reflecting and Serving Minnesota. And I'm wondering if you have four-year graduation rates for these various categories, students who received Pell Grants, students of color, non-traditional students, if you cut the numbers that way, I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. No. Madam Chair, Representative, I can tell you the number for students of color because that's fresh in my mind. I looked it up just in the last few days in preparation for this hearing. It's 55%. Four-year graduation rate for students of color across all 17 of our schools. We have data for some of these other breakdowns. I don't have it at my fingertips, but I'd be glad to provide it to you and the committee.
Okay. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. That I would be most grateful, and I'm certain we all would be. I do have one other question, Madam Chair. Thank you. A comment was made, actually several, about having had to restrain spending in other areas, and that's music to my ears. And I'm wondering if you could just share some examples about how you've been able to achieve that.
Mr. Goodwin?
Madam Chair, Representative Larry Goodwin, obviously you know that, don't you? Mm-hmm. In our case, I will cite one example. We have a long suit, as does St. Catherine, in healthcare programming. And we have a nationally recognized electronic medical records program, off of which several years ago we spun a Center for Healthcare Innovation, which was designed to help rural clinics who were making a transition from paper-based to electronic-based records make the transition and pick the right software. That worked very well, and we were then positioning ourselves for ICD-10 requirements, which is the International Classification of Disease, which was supposed to be done back in 10 and has been pushed out and pushed out. And the last time the federal government pushed it out, we decided that we could no longer afford to have this operation on our campus, and so we laid off four people. The center was a really good thing for rural health care in Minnesota, but because of forces outside our control, we thought we can't continue to support it if it's going to result in our students having to pay higher tuition. So there's a painful choice that wasn't something that was just a lot of fat that we could easily, but it was a good thing that we decided is not mission critical.
I would just add one
Sister
other
Lee?
Example. I'm sorry,
Sister Lee?
Andrea Lee from St. Catharines. I would just add one other example at St. Kate's. When we go into the budget process each year, we have what's called the three-legged stool rule. And that basically is that whatever new money is coming into the budget, whether it's coming in by way of tuition increase or it's coming in by way of added volume, that there will be roughly equal allocations among compensation for existing employees, financial aid for students, and capital investments in the facilities. And so if we don't whatever, we've tried to keep those in roughly in balance, and it's really made people think a lot about how those pieces are interrelated. So because we don't get any, we have no public money to support facilities improvements. For example, when we built our laboratories at Cadaver Lab for physical therapy and physician assistant programs, those facilities were built in existing buildings that were 100 years old and done for a total cost that was under $2 million. They're magicians, and if you came to visit them, it's because that's what we have to do. We don't get to say we're going to start from scratch and just build a, you know, a big building. We have to learn to make do with what we have. So it's really kind of a simple answer that we learn to live within our means. That's it.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Those were great examples.
Okay, if we could, I think we're going to move on. I believe, Sister Lee, you have a presentation.
Yes, as I said, I'm Sister Andrea Lee. I'm from St. Catherine University, and it's an honor to speak with you. I know you all care a lot about higher education in Minnesota. My purpose is simple, and that's to share more about the many ways in which private nonprofit universities contribute to Minnesota's economic health, workforce preparation, and quality of life. Just a few words about St. Kate's as just one example of private higher education in Minnesota. When you think St. Kate's, you may think Catholic, women, liberal arts, nursing, when St. Catherine's comes to mind, and yes, we're all of that and more. You may not know that today St. Kate's is a comprehensive university enrolling more than 5,000 students in a broad array of academic programs that range from certificates and associate degrees to clinical doctorates. We're Catholic, but we welcome many students from every faith and from no faith. We're home to the nation's most comprehensive and, depending on what day you count, the largest undergraduate college for women in the United States. But men also enroll in our associate, graduate, and degree completion programs. We've had a century-long history of excellence in liberal arts education for students who are majors, but also for the majority of our students who major in fields like business, education, social work, and a whole host of healthcare fields, similar to those that Larry mentioned. Our graduates work among you as business leaders, scientists, medical professionals, educators, artists, lawyers, and judges, information managers, and entrepreneurs, and they rank among Minnesota's most engaged and informed citizens. Your staff assistant to this committee is also one of our wonderful recent graduates, Kaylee Tafe. Our students are surprisingly diverse. About a third of all of our undergraduates and 40% of our entering first-year class this year came from historically underrepresented populations. Our university is private, but our students are far from wealthy, and stereotypes about upper-middle-class finishing schools for girls just do not apply. Although we enroll students from all socioeconomic backgrounds, you may be surprised that the average family income at St. Catherine's is $64,000 for students in our traditional baccalaureate program, which is less than the average family income for students enrolling at the University of Minnesota. If you're like most Americans, you harbor a few myths about private, nonprofit higher education. And so here are a few mythbusters or takeaways, and I'm going to offer them in Twitter format to illustrate a bit about how St. Kate's and others like us offer value and great return on investment to Minnesota. You see the first one up there. I'm not going to read them because you can look at them, but we are surprisingly and happily diverse. St. Kate's class of first years last fall, as I said, was 40% multicultural, with many coming from the local Somali, Hmong, and Latina communities. 45% of our traditional first-year students received Pell Grants, a key indicator of socioeconomic diversity and student financial need. Our next tweet, our net price, what students actually pay, as Paul spoke about, the published tuition minus grants and scholarships of all kinds, remains at 2008 levels when adjusted for inflation. That's consistent with the four-year private higher education sector nationally. St. Kate's has invested, like most of my colleagues, substantially in financial aid, exceeding our tuition rate increases for seven straight years. The majority comes from discounted tuition, as we said before, the rest from private gifts. And of course, the state grant program, it makes a crucial difference for our students. Some 1,300 Katies this fall received one, and we are very grateful for and hope to make a strong case for a robust state grant program. It's a vital part of our financial aid program. The simplest fact is probably the most convincing. A Minnesota student and her need for state financial aid exists whether she enrolls at St. Catherine, at Augsburg, at the University of Minnesota, or at Minsku. She is willing to work and work hard to scrimp and to borrow, but there is still a gap, unmet need, and the state grant helps to fill that gap. So we know that there are many urgent pulls for every dollar in the state budget, but believe that investment through the state grant program offers quantifiable benefits for our students and, as we stated before, for Minnesota as well. My third tweet, dozens of market responsive programs at St. Kate's, each grounded in the liberal arts, career-ready graduates who adapt effectively to rapid change. St. Catherine delivers nearly 70 liberal arts and professional majors in a variety of formats and delivery systems on two campuses in St. Paul and Minneapolis. Variety and flexibility serve our students well, whether they are 18-year-old hockey players from St. Cloud, working parents seeking career advancement, or emerging leaders in business or healthcare. We offer more than a dozen graduate degrees, master's, and clinical doctorates, housed primarily in our large and influential School of Health. Our healthcare programs improve access to high-quality, affordable healthcare by meeting Minnesota's escalating demand for highly skilled professionals, especially primary care providers. We prepare professionally competent graduates in fields such as nursing, occupational and physical therapy, physician assistants, exercise and sports science, interpreting, sonography, radiography, education, and social work. And our employment placement rates in many of those fields approaches 100%. Next tweet, graduates lead and influence in Minnesota hospitals, schools, businesses, community agencies, government, and cutting-edge entrepreneurial ventures. We place a premium on developing collaborative learning and problem-solving abilities and on respecting diverse cultures and perspectives, key leadership skills in a diverse and rapidly changing world. Our students practice how to seek creative answers to persistent and vexing social problems, and they leave the university ready to lead in their careers and communities. Next tweet, education in the liberal arts program in the liberal arts develops graduates who can think, write, decide, create, collaborate, change, write, speak, adapt, and integrate. Regardless of the major a student chooses, liberal arts education at St. Kate's prepares graduates to be critical thinkers, strong writers, and creative problem solvers. Graduates who can contribute immediately and well to emerging needs and opportunities within Minnesota's economy. Responsive to our changing workforce needs for well over 100 years, St. Kate's and others like us continually reimagine and redesign academic programs to align with emerging workforce needs, and at the same time to equip our graduates to respond effectively to change and opportunity, to live full lives and contribute effectively to the common good. My next tweet, I am St. Catherine, meet Sara Noor, the face of private higher education and a vital part of Minnesota's future. Facts, data, and statistics aside, I'd answer the why of private higher education, the why of St. Kate's, with a human face. Let me tell you just a bit about Sara Noor, a St. Catherine alumna and dedicated community professional, recently featured in the Minneapolis Star Tribune for her leadership in healthcare. She is the face of the St. Catherine mission. I gave Sara her first diploma and her second. She came to St. Kate's as a 20-year-old single mother who'd spent the majority of her life in a Kenyan refugee camp where her own mother died. At St. Catherine's, she juggled college, motherhood, and part-time jobs to pursue her nursing degree. Her drive and commitment led to graduation, a career as a nurse at HCMC, and then a graduate degree. She is now, 10 years later, Chief Executive Officer of People's Health Center Services, a network of Twin Cities clinics serving the needs of low-income and immigrant communities, especially her own Somali community. Her education, her contributions to community, and the benefits they bring to our economy and to the quality of life in Minnesota represent the real impact that St. Catherine and the private colleges have on Minnesota. So consider this, consider all of this, that 75% of St. Catherine's 40,000 living graduates live and work in Minnesota. By investing in students, you invest in our state. Earning power increases with education, especially when students are prepared in high-demand fields. On graduation day, a single mother with a degree changes lanes forever, from potential welfare recipient to probable taxpayer. You might think that associate degree students are primarily first generation or low income, and for some that may be true, but 30% of our two-year degree students already have a bachelor's degree and return to St. Catherine's because they want or need to change careers. The expanded use of physician assistants and advanced practice nurses will be critical to the provision of primary care in our future. By 2020, 80% of practicing nurses in the U.S. should have a four-year degree, according to the Institute of Medicine, and only about half of Minnesota's nurses do right now. With other schools like ours, St. Catherine's is a large, second only to the university, provider of healthcare graduates for our state, and only the University of Minnesota graduates more. We've been in the education business in healthcare for well over 100 years, and I assure you we're in for the long haul. Finally, and importantly, graduates of our liberal arts colleges are smart, engaged, and employed. There's so many ways to talk about their contributions, looking at the exemplary work of women like Erin Murphy, one of your colleagues, Pam Wheelock, Mary Louise Kloss, Margaret Marinin, Doctors Catherine Ann and Ellen Bendel, Betty McCullum, Sarah Gavin, and Mary Jo McGuire, all students of the liberal arts. Through corporate and clinical partnerships, we have about 1,000 of them in the Twin Cities and across the state, through outreach into local communities. Graduates of our school teach in classrooms, they deliberate on court benches, and they serve in executive, financial, and planning roles. They run companies, agencies, committees, and schools, and they build stadiums. They make decisions, create and consider options, and volunteer. They heal in our hospitals and clinics, imagine and plan the future, and most importantly, they parent the next generation of citizens. Finally, enrollment of students of color at Minnesota's private colleges and universities has almost doubled since 2004 to nearly 10,000. That's good news in a state that's growing increasingly diverse. Of that, 10,000 students of color enrolled statewide, more than 1,200 are at St. Catherine. During our first president's entire tenure from 1905 through 1937, St. Kate's graduated 1,000 students in total. Today, we graduate more than 1,000 a year. That means over one in every four students who's ever graduated from St. Catherine's has graduated since 1998, and that means about 1,500 new Minnesota taxpayers each year. We also enroll many students who began their schooling at a community college. They don't count positively in our four-year graduation rate. You might be interested to find out. We work to ensure that they transfer to St. Cat. Their transfer is seamless. And in that sense, we collaborate with and not compete with Minsky and the university. After all, we share a common purpose. I know as legislators, you have to manage competing goods with limited resources, just like we do. You have tough decisions to make and many facts and needs to weigh. While expensive, higher education is also an investment, and it's one with an exceptional ROI. As my Latin teacher of old used to say, inscribe that on your eyelids. Presidents Anderson, Goodwin, and I will have succeeded today if you leave here convinced that we are your eager partners, collaborators, and essential work for Minnesota's future. Thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you, Sister Lee. We have about 10 minutes left for the rest of your presentation. And I know we have two presenters left, so I don't know if we will have any more questions, but if you could shorten your testimony just a bit, because we've taken a bit more time than we've had allotted. So we have about 10 minutes left. So Mr. Anderson or Mr. Goodwin, do you want to?
Larry, I'll take five.
Okay. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are people who believe that students at private liberal arts colleges are all majoring in rainbows and pixie dust. They graduate with vast debt to jobs, all of which involve the question, would you like fries with that? And I am here to demonstrate that exactly the opposite is the case. So, first of all, I'll just tell you that I'm not going to read through all of the information on these slides, obviously. 40% of the students at our college, 3,000 enrolled, are pursuing a major or concentration in the natural sciences or math. We rank consistently among the top 10 colleges in the country to provide graduates who go on to earn doctoral degrees in chemistry and the physical sciences. 5% of our graduating class every year goes to medical school. Of our students, 88% receive some form of financial aid. The average need-based aid package our students are receiving is $28,600. Last year, we allocated $60 million of financial aid to our students, and in response to Representative Barrett's question, about 6% of that was funded financial aid being paid for by the endowment. The rest was price discount of that $60 million. 15% of our students are receiving Pell Grants. 12% of them receive the Minnesota State Bank. The average indebtedness upon graduation of a student at our college is $28,400. The number to focus on as I think about student debt is student loan default rate. That's the best measure of is there value to the education you invested in such that you can pay back your loans. The national student loan default rate is above 13%. Student loan default rate for students from St. Olaf College is 1.6%. We've made a real commitment to understanding thoroughly and reporting, as we do on our website, information about post-graduation outcomes for our students. So we have a 91 or 92%, depending on the last 2 years, response rate to the question, what are you doing 1 year after graduation? And here's the answer. 62% of our graduates last year are employed. They're either in the private or public sector. 11% of them are in full-time service in the military, the Peace Corps, or groups like AmeriCorps or Teach for America. 24% are pursuing further education or they're in graduate school. Of those who are directly employed, 45% in business, 15% in private higher ed, 16% in healthcare. You can read the rest of the figures for yourself. Down the road further than just 1 year, which is a pretty short time frame for what's the value you receive for the education that you invested in, more than 58% of our respondents are saying that their first paying job after graduation was related to their undergraduate major and that it was leading them to their desired career path. This is a screenshot of one of the pages on our homepage, college website. And it's the outcomes page. And this is our attempt to demonstrate to anyone with an interest what happens to students after St. Olaf in concrete and specific terms. And so all the information that I just gave you about graduation, post-graduation employment is shown under what happens after graduation. That's one of the tabs on the left-hand side. Our retention and graduation rates are available there as well. Our four-year graduation rate is 85%. Round numbers. The number for students of color, incidentally, is 80%. Our first to second year retention rate is 94%. under evidence of learning, we show one of the things that people don't talk about when they try and talk about college rankings, and that is, did your students actually learn anything? And so using a nationally normed pre-test and post-test, we're able to answer the question, are your students learning what you think you're teaching them, and is it something they didn't know when they started as first years? Finally, I'd like to share just this page that shows what happens to Minnesota as a result of the location of St. Olaf in this great state. 46% of our 35,000 alums live in Minnesota, and here are the places where they're employed. The largest employer of St. Olaf graduates is Target Corporation, where there are currently 240 OLEs working. The next one is the Mayo Health System, where there are 236 OLEs employed. There are 136 employed by the state of Minnesota. 103 are working at 3M, and 142 are working at Wells Fargo. The thing about this page that's most interesting to me is the breadth of areas in which students are working. You've got the Vikings, you've got Prairie Home Companion, and you've got wealth management, financial industries, insurance, Ecolab, technology, and so forth. Thank you for your kind attention. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. I think for right now we're just going to go to Mr. Gooden, and then hopefully we'll have time for a few questions at the end.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Larry Goodwin, College of St. Scholastica. So I've got a slide pack that you can look through and read the statistics. I just want to lift up several points that I would like to leave with you. First of all, in terms of our enrollment, we're about 4,200. What makes us a little different is that we are more non-traditional students than traditional students. That non-traditional half is growing. We have several campuses in the state. About a quarter of our students are online students, and we are embedded at three of the community colleges in the state. We've been on the Central Lakes campus in Brainerd since the 1980s. We're on Itasca's and also why am I blanking? At Inver Hills as well. This means that a student can finish a two-year AA program and then get a four-year degree from the College of St. Scholastica, staying on the community college campus. It's usually going to be limited offerings, business or social work, but it's a nice partnership. Our demographics, you can look for yourself. I always say private does not mean wealthy and exclusive, but more than a third of our students come from family incomes under $50,000. We're 40% first-generation students on the Duluth campus. I talked about some of our programming. The two points I'd like to raise up in the end are, one is mission. We're a Catholic Benedictine college serving a pluralistic community. The point of our mission is not to proselytize or to try to get people to become Catholics. It is rather to send a signal that is true of several of our colleges, that we take the education of the whole person, the head and the heart, seriously. I say to entering students that the world has got a lot of smart people in it. Among them are Bernie Madoff and Osama bin Laden. Some of these very smart people are doing a lot of damage. And so we believe it is part of the mission of our understanding of higher education at Scholastica and probably at others as well, to build into the curriculum and the co-curriculum experiences that cause students to have to develop a moral compass, to have to think out critically the value dimension that will guide the application of their knowledge later in life. So this idea of the education of the heart, I think, is really important for several of our campuses. And finally, on the affordability issue, I'll just mention two more points. One is that we're looking at some very low-enrolled majors and minors on our campus. Unfortunately, they're mostly in the liberal arts and mostly in languages. But rather than cutting these programs, I've been working with a chancellor at UMD, and I even crossed the bridge and go over to talk to the chancellor at UWS, Renee Wachter, and also to the two-year college president at Lake Superior College to ask, and I'm getting a very positive reception, rather than any of us cutting programs that are low enrolled, how about if we partner up? Now, we already do that informally with UMD. We have a Russian minor. UMD offers first-year Russian, but if their students want to take the minor, they come over to the second year with us. Why don't we do that with some more programs? Just keep the same tuition structure. But it's an attempt to be more efficient and more cooperative. And finally, I've got a faculty and staff task force working. Here's the charge I gave them: reinvent the traditional model and make it more affordable. That's just, that's going to take them a couple weeks. But the point here is we've got a model of higher learning that is expensive because it has a lot of contact between professors and students in relatively small classes. And here and elsewhere, we're trying to raise the question, is there a different way to structure the experience that might be more affordable through, for example, giving degrees based on demonstrated competency rather than seat time, and using professors more as mentors and guides and judges than as deliverers of information? Is that something that might yield a more affordable model? Or project-based approach to learning whereby students are confronted with complex projects, the accomplishment of which requires them to master the learning outcomes that we're about and help one another in the process?
Mr. Goodwin, could I have you one last sentence and then we need to move on? Thank you.
Might we move more toward the work college model where students are also employees of the institution? So these are some of the models that we're looking at.
Thank you, Mr. Goodwin. Thank you. And we're going to move on to the Minnesota Career College Association. So thank you all for coming today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name for the record, please, and what organization you're from.
Yes. Madam Chair and members of the Higher Education Committee, my name is Katie Michikanis, and I am the current chair of the Minnesota Career College Association. It is my honor to present to you today an overview of the career colleges in Minnesota. While the Minnesota Career College Association represents 11 institutions focused on career post-secondary education, there are several others in our state. Today's presentation will focus on statewide and region-wide data pertinent to our sector. MCCA is a volunteer-run organization, so data collection analysis is oftentimes hard and not always reliable. For this reason, we have used public data. This data does not break out our 11 institutions. Therefore, some of the data in the presentation is MCCA-specific, and in other cases, the data represents our sector as a whole in Minnesota. Minnesota career colleges provide a sound education to a targeted group of individuals in the state that have life experiences to make good choices that fit their needs but often find themselves in a variety of personal circumstances, whether socioeconomic or demographic, that are seen by experts as high barriers to completion. Whether I am talking about a young medical assisting student at Sanford Brown College or a second career culinary student at the Arts Institute, students that attend career colleges in this state have the same ambitions as all Minnesotans who attend post-secondary schools in other sectors. They simply want to follow their dream. As stated, the data presented today relies on public data sources. This slide shows you where you can find this data and replicate any of the tables and charts. We also have a much more data-rich report that has been validated by a subject matter expert that I'm happy to share with you all individually. Today is intended to be an overview and an opening for further conversations about our sector, which we welcome. The size of the career college sector in Minnesota can be measured by two metrics, enrollment and degree production. The table on this slide shows the notable presence of the career colleges have had in Minnesota. From the peak enrollment at career colleges of 10% of Minnesota's total higher education enrollment in 2009, to the current enrollment number of about 6% of Minnesota's total higher education enrollment, the group continues to contribute to the workforce training necessary for Minnesota employers and the economy. The decline or flat growth in enrollment has occurred in all sectors, but specific to our sector, the decline can be attributed to a variety of reasons, mainly the economic recovery, as well as qualified enrollment standards implemented at most of our institutions since 2009. Degree production is the second measurement of sector size. It refers to any certificate or degree type offered by an institution and achieved by the student. The table on your slide is degree production, reported to the Minnesota Office of Higher Education and compiled by IPEDS. What should be noted here is that while we enroll 6% of students in Minnesota, our sector accounts for 10% of the degrees conferred in 2012 and 13. As policymakers, it is important to be aware of what types of degrees we produce. While we encourage lifelong learning, we are also aware of the shortage of workers and large workforce demand issues. The focus on the attainment of certificates, associates, and bachelor's degrees. As you can see, 96% of the degrees earned by students in our sectors were concentrated in those credentials. This slide demonstrates what economic impact of our institutions has on Minnesota. It measures the direct and indirect economic impact of the existence of our schools in Minnesota. The federal government provides what multiplier effect exists, and that multiplier has been applied to the revenue created by the institutions. As a result, we can confidently say that as a result of our activity, we've added $1.3 billion to the Minnesota economy. The value add, similar to GDP, is at $735 million. $438 million of direct and indirect wages, again, taking into account the multiplier effect, and over 14,000 jobs. We do want to note that this is lower than our numbers 3 years ago when we first did an economic impact study, but we have fewer students than 3 years ago. While they are still impressive numbers, they are lower. This economic activity also has produced $40 million annually in state and local taxes. This is based on a number provided by Budget and Management and the Budget Department of Revenue effective tax rates. The student characteristics that I'm going to share come from NPSAS, the National Postsecondary Student Survey, a survey undertaken every 4 years by the U.S. Department of Education. The slides include data from the Regional Survey of the Great Lakes and Plains region. The results include and are indicative of Minnesota enrollments in the sector and the use of the 2012 regional data that has been confirmed against the 2008 NPSAS data, which was representative of Minnesota. As I stated before, MCCA is an all-volunteer-run organization, and therefore data collection is challenging. We rely on public data to help tell our story. We have several slides that indicate the characteristics of students in our sector. I will walk through them with you, adding some color to certain points. In general, our students are older than other sectors. Almost half of them are over 30 years old. We enroll significantly more women than men. We attribute this to our program offerings, to the fact that 26 of the institutions percentage of the institution's enrollments are in the health sciences. Students in our sector are more likely to indicate they have a disability. A disability is defined by NIPSAS as someone who is hearing or visually impaired, has a speech or language impediment, has mobility challenges, has ADD, or has a mental or emotional disability or developmental disability. These students need additional support, and they find it at our schools. The ratio of faculty is 1 to 12, with additional advising and career placement assistance available as a part of our culture. 40% of our students reported to be from a community of color, compared to 31% at the public 2 years and 26% at the private nonprofits. Our students are more likely to be veterans or active military compared to other sectors, but not overly so. Nearly 90% of our students have no military background. We have found our online offerings and flexible career-focused education model what is similar to what these veterans and active military experience already. Risk factors in a student's life may affect their experiences and success in school. The following student characteristics of our sector demonstrate what percentages of our students have these risk factors. Risk factors according to NIPSAS include the following 7 situations and can contribute to persistence: delayed enrollment, no high school diploma, part-time enrollment, financial independence, having dependents, being a single parent, or working full-time. Another set of risk factors, as determined by the TRIO program, include low income, first generation, low income, not first generation, not low income, not low income, and not first generation. Generally, students at our school possess many more risk factors than other sectors. 42% of student respondents indicate they have at least 4 of these risk factors. Of the career college students who met TRIO criteria, first-generation students comprise over 75% of students at career colleges, the most of any sector. All of these conditions require a substantial amount of support services, something we pride ourselves on. And it is the same conditions that also make it more likely the student may not succeed even with the support. Or these conditions could influence the kind of work and earnings the student achieves after degree completion. Please note that our students are independent, both in mindset and the criteria that the federal government uses to determine independent status based on the FAFSA. Almost 35% of them are single parents. There is a full 50% more that are independent because of their age, meaning they do not have alternative resources to help either, meaning they do not use their parents' income in filing the FAFSA, and very few get assistance from their parents either. These students are more likely to make important decisions that involve financial trade-offs in thoughtful ways as they are spending their own earnings on this lifelong investment. Career colleges see themselves as employees first and students second, a reverse of the traditional student. Most of these students' jobs are off campus and they generally earn more than $15,000 a year. Our students delay their post-secondary start on average 4 years, whether for personal or financial reasons, but they are dedicated and know what they want. They tend not to change their programs once enrolled. And 35% of them have already earned a degree prior to entry. Members, our typical student has barriers that make school harder to finish, but they are smart, experienced, and independent people capable of making thoughtful decisions around their educational choice. Like all Minnesotans seeking a post-secondary degree, our students want to succeed. Our students have the same expectations that students in other sectors have about post-secondary achievement. When I started in this sector, I remember asking a paralegal student what she wanted to do with that degree. Her response was, it was her stepping stone to becoming a lawyer. Our students dream big. The average career college student tends to earn a certificate or degree much sooner than those in the public 2 years, due in part to the fact that between 70 and 80% of students bring in credits with them when they enroll at career colleges. They are highly likely to attend full-time, and in fact, we operate on a quarter full year-round instructional calendar that helps with the time to completion. About 40% of the dependent students entering career schools are in the lowest earning quartile, with a family adjusted gross income under $30,000 a year. 45% of them have parents who either did not complete high school or have only a high school diploma or equivalent. Generally, students from career colleges do not come from family backgrounds with string post-secondary experiences. They lack role models of post-secondary achievement. Almost 46% of our students in career colleges report that the net price as a share of income is over 40%. Other sectors indicate less than 25%. This explains in part why career college students need to borrow as heavily as they do. It also reflects student choice. Experienced adults are making these schools their choice even in light of the burden. Our students are dedicated and satisfied. According to a Minnesota Office of Higher Education student satisfaction survey that students in our sector participated in, 83% of students who achieved an associate degree at one of our institutions would choose the same institution again, and 86% feel the same way about their certificate programs. It also shows that the same thoughtful group of students chose us for class schedule, time to degree, and reputation. Over 95% of them were very satisfied or satisfied with time to degree. Time to degree reduces debt and gets the graduate into the workplace faster. The goal, correct? Not only are our students satisfied with the timing and program, they are also graduating. As this table shows, MCCA schools have the highest graduation and transfer rate amongst two-year institutions in Minnesota. Our institutions actively participated in the Minnesota Office of Higher Education's research on retention and completion and strive to find best practices in helping our unique population reach the finish line and achieve their dream of a post-secondary degree. This slide is of particular interest to policymakers. It demonstrates the median debt for associate's degrees. We chose to demonstrate associate's degrees because that is the credential in which we graduate the most students in. While the highest debt load occurs in our sector, as discussed, we also have a higher net price as we do not get state appropriations, nor do we have endowments that can buy down tuition. We have reiterated that students making the choice to attend our institutions are making that choice with experience and thoughtfulness and are drawn to our institutions because of schedule, reputation, and time to completion. Also, it should be noted that many of our institutions continue to look for efficiencies that have allowed tuition reductions in recent years of up to 18%. This slide demonstrates the student default rates for Minnesota students. While we feel there is room for improvement, several things should be noted. Career college Minnesota students pay back their debt better than the national average. Second, our students pay back their debt better than other sectors. Third, our institutions are working with students who historically do not pay back their loans, and those students are those who do not complete their program. At some career colleges, the student is only packaged to the cost of attendance, therefore lowering how much they take out in loans. We offer significant loan management tools post-graduation, and we have a robust reach-out plans to help educate students on how to avoid defaulting on the loan. We are also supporting the Lutheran Social Services Bill to make their loan repayment program more robust and hope to partner with them at some of our institutions. We have discussed our students, our programs, and our results. Now we want to share the outcomes our students experience in the workplace, the end goal. This slide shows you what some of our program offerings are. As career-focused institutions, we take our program offerings very serious. We all use different approaches to determine what programs to offer based on our mission, but all institutions work with business advisory boards, analyze local and national data and employment trends, and look at projections from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We're also excited to be participating in the Itasca project and their wanted analytics that allows real-time data analysis of jobs in the market. This slide is based on DEED employment data and compares the like programs that our sector offers and common programs that the MNSCU two-year institutions offer. We did this to maintain consistency with previous slides as associate's degrees are our most common conferred credential. The chart is a ratio comparison, which means anywhere the number is 100 or higher, Our sector has more graduates employed in that field than our brethren in the Minsky two-year space. We are happy with most of the outcomes and know that in areas like justice studies and legal studies is an area we can improve on. We also do note that there is such variance in some of the numbers that we have concerns about the data that DEED has. We would welcome this kind of data comparison with other sectors as well. This slide is the same comparison, only this time we are showing earning data. Again, anywhere there is 100% or more, our graduates have exceeded the Minsky two-year graduates in earning in the common field. We have some research and analysis to do on a couple of our programs we are falling behind, specifically in the justice studies field, health professions, and engineering and technology fields. Not only do our students work, raise families, contribute to the workforce, they are also engaged in community service. This slide shows a sample of where our students spent more than 18,000 hours giving back to the community. We are proud to share with you that one of our institutions is also a public benefit corporation, meaning the secondary mission beyond educating students is public benefit and serving the community. Our institutions believe strongly that in order to have a strong community, all organizations need to give back, and we are clearly dedicated to that goal. MCCA prides itself on innovations that are student-focused. You may have read in the paper recently that Rasmussen College rolled out a $9,500 bachelor completer program based on competency-based education. Many of our institutions use technology and flipped classrooms to deliver content. We work on customized training with local businesses. We have locked in tuition to allow for student budgeting. Our institutions are involved with thought leaders in higher education, such as the Lumina and Great Gates Foundation. Also, as MCCA, we participate actively in the Minnesota Office of Higher Education Student Advisory Council, the P20 Council. We were the first higher education association to join MiniMinds, a coalition focused on low-income families and early childhood education. Our institutions actively participated in the Citizens League Higher Education Forums. Some of our institutions were active at the National Conference of State Legislators this summer, and we have signed on to the Itasca Project focused on workforce and education alignment. I've talked enough about our institutions. I'd like to welcome our student testifier, but I can stand for questions as well.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and listen to your testimony.
My name is Jennifer Cromery. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm glad to be here today to tell you my story in 3 minutes or less. My education story began even before I graduated from high school. And no, I won't tell you the year. I wanted to become a nurse, but it would never happen because a lottery system was in place at North Hennepin Community College at the time, and my name was never to be drawn from that hat. So I decided to go to school to become a medical assistant. I completed a two-year work-at-your-own-pace degree at 916 Votech in 12 months and landed a wonderful job. Within the next 3 years, I had gotten married and was expecting my oldest daughter. After she was born, I realized that I wanted to stay home and raise my kids myself. So I quit my job to open my licensed daycare. I made a promise to myself that I would be home with them until they didn't need me anymore. Just a sidebar here, I didn't realize they were going to need me. Back to the story. 18 years later, the time seemed right, and I closed my daycare and got a job at our local school district as a special ed paraprofessional. This way, I was able to be home with the kids and when they were off school. 8 years later, because of budget cuts in the district, I lost my job at the school. I had some soul searching to do. I was at a crossroads in my life. My son was about to graduate from high school, and I was going to be an empty nester. And at that time, in my own mind, they didn't need me anymore. So I decided that I finally wanted to follow my dream and go back into the medical field. But unfortunately, my skills from all those years ago were badly outdated, and I was going to have to go back to school. All three of my kids had chosen state colleges, and I knew that wasn't the type of setting that I wanted. I needed something smaller, with more one-on-one instruction, and somewhere that I felt like I fit in, because I was a non-traditional student in every way. and it had been a really long time since I'd been in school. I started looking for a place to attend, but struck out at the first two schools that I visited. Then I came to visit Rasmussen College in Blaine. I knew when I walked in the front door that I had found the right place and signed up that day in the summer of 2010. The state grant program was a big help because I was going to be paying for two college tuitions. I graduated with my associate's degree in medical administration in December of 2011, and now I'm working on my bachelor's degree in healthcare management. I should graduate from Rasmussen in December of this year, and I hope to find a job that will enable me to use what I've worked so hard to learn over the last five years. Thank you, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you. Do members, we have questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Do you have any final thoughts to add?
In conclusion, we want to thank you for your time. We want to thank you for the investment in the state grant program that 30% of our students participate in. And we encourage you to support the governor's recommendation on raising the living and miscellaneous expenses to the poverty line and realigning both the 2 and 4 year tuition caps in the state grant formula. We would also like to extend an invitation to all of you to a campus to experience our culture. I will stand for any questions.
Okay. I don't see any questions from members, so thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. And if there's no other questions and no announcements, I believe we are adjourned. Thank you.